living in prayer and watching, and such good works as may make all her time turn to her advantage and be placed to her account at the last day? Is the one careless of expense and glad to be able to adorn herself with every costly ornament of dress? And does the other consider her fortune as a talent given her by God, which is to be improved religiously and no more to be spent in vain and needless ornaments than it is to be buried in the earth? Where must you look to find one person of religion differing in this manner from another that has none? And yet, if they do not differ in these things which are here related, can it with any sense be said, the one is a good Christian and the other not? Take another instance among men. Leo. Footnote 3. Leo. The lion, probably suggesting the favorite of society. Leo has a great deal of good nature, has kept what they call good company, hates everything that is false and base, is very generous and brave to his friends, but has concerned himself so little with religion that he hardly knows the difference betwixt a Jew and a Christian. Eusebius, footnote 4, Eusebius, pious in the ecclesiastical sense, as the name of the first church historian, but without reference to that historian's character. Eusebius, on the other hand, has had early impressions of religion and buys books of devotion. He can talk of all the feasts and fasts of the church and knows the names of most men that have been eminent for piety. You never hear him swear or make a loose jest. And when he talks of religion, he talks of it as of a matter of the last concern. Here you see that one person has religion enough, according to the way of the world, to be reckoned a pious Christian, and the other is so far from all appearance of religion that he may fairly be reckoned a heathen. And yet, if you look into their common life, if you examine their chief and ruling tempers in the greatest articles of life, or the greatest doctrines of Christianity, you will not find the least difference imaginable. Consider them with regard to the use of the world, because that is what everybody can see. Now, to have right notions and tempers with relation to this world is as essential to religion as to have right notions of God. And it is as possible for a man to worship a crocodile and yet be a pious man, as to have his affection set upon this world, and yet be a good Christian. But now, if you consider Leo and Eusebius in this respect, you will find them exactly alike, seeking, using, and enjoying all that can be got in this world in the same manner and for the same ends. You will find that riches, prosperity, pleasures, indulgences, state equipages, and honor are just as much the happiness of Eusebius as they are of Leo. And yet, if Christianity has not changed a man's mind and temper with relation to these things, what can we say that it has done for him? For if the doctrines of Christianity were practiced, they would make a man as different from other people as to all worldly tempers, sensual pleasures, and the pride of life, as a wise man is different from a natural. Footnote 5. Natural, in this case, means an idiot. It would be as easy a thing to know a Christian by his outward course of life as it is now difficult to find anybody that lives it. For it is notorious that Christians are now not only like other men in their frailties and infirmities. This might be in some degree excusable. But the complaint is, they are like heathens in all the main and chief articles of their lives. They enjoy the world and live every day in the same tempers and the same designs and the same indulgences as they did who knew not God, nor of any happiness in another life. Everybody that is capable of any reflection must have observed that this is generally the state even of devout people, whether men or women. You may see them different from other people, so far as to times and places of prayer, but generally like the rest of the world in all the other parts of their lives, that is, adding Christian devotion to a heathen life. I have the authority of our blessed Savior for this remark, where he says, "Take no thought, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after all these things do the Gentiles seek." Matthew 6:31-32. But if to be thus affected even with the necessary things of this life show that we are not yet of a Christian spirit, but are like the heathens, surely to enjoy the vanity and folly of the world as they did, to be like them in the main chief tempers of our lives, in self-love and indulgence, in sensual pleasures and diversions, in the vanity of dress, the love of show and greatness, or any other gaudy distinctions of fortune, is a much greater sign of a heathen temper. And consequently, they who add devotion to such a life must be said to pray as Christians, but live as heathens. Chapter 2. An inquiry into the reason why the generality of Christians fall so far short of the holiness and devotion of Christianity. It may now be reasonably inquired how it comes to pass that the lives even of the better sort of people are thus strangely contrary to the principles of Christianity. But before I give a direct answer to this, I desire it may also be inquired how it comes to pass that swearing is so common a vice among Christians. It is indeed not yet so common among women as it is among men. But among men this sin is so common that perhaps there are more than 2 in 3 that are guilty of it through the whole course of their lives, swearing more or less, just as it happens, some constantly, others only now and then, as it were, by chance. Now I ask, how comes it that 2 in 3 of the men are guilty of so gross and profane a sin as this is? There is neither ignorance nor human infirmity to plead for it. It is against an express commandment and the most plain doctrines of our blessed Savior. Do but now find the reason why the generality of men live in this notorious vice, and then you will have found the reason why the generality even of the better sort of people live so contrary to Christianity. Now the reason of common swearing is this. It is because men have not so much as the intention to please God in all their actions. For let a man but have so much piety as to intend to please God in all the actions of his life, as the happiest and best thing in the world, and then he will never swear more. It will be as impossible for him to swear whilst he feels this intention within himself, as it is impossible for a man that intends to please his prince to go up and abuse him to his face. It seems but a small and necessary part of piety to have such a sincere intention as this, and that he has no reason to look upon himself as a disciple of Christ who is not thus far advanced in piety. And yet it is purely for want of this degree of piety that you see such a mixture of sin and folly in the lives even of the better sort of people. It is for want of this intention that you see men that profess religion, yet live in swearing and sensuality, that you see clergymen given to pride and covetousness and worldly enjoyments. It is for want of this intention that you see women that profess devotion, yet living in all the folly and vanity of dress, wasting their time in idleness and pleasures, and in all such instances of state and equipage as their estates will reach. For let but a woman feel her heart full of this intention, and she will find it as impossible to patch or paint as to curse or swear. She will no more desire to shine at balls or assemblies or make a figure amongst those that are most finely dressed than she will desire to dance upon a rope to please spectators. She will know that the one is as far from the wisdom and excellency of the Christian spirit as the other. It was this general intention that made the primitive Christians such eminent instances of piety, and made the goodly fellowship of the saints and all the glorious army of martyrs and confessors. And if you will here stop and ask yourselves why you are not as pious as the primitive Christians were, your own heart will tell you that it is neither through ignorance nor inability, but purely because you never thoroughly intended it. You observe the same Sunday worship that they did, and you are strict in it because it is your full intention to be so. And when you as fully intend to be like them in their ordinary common life, when you intend to please God in all your actions, you will find it as possible as to be strictly exact in the service of the church. And when you have this intention to please God in all your actions, as the happiest and best thing in the world, you will find in you as great an aversion to everything that is vain and impertinent in common life, whether of business or pleasure, as you now have to anything that is profane. You will be as fearful of living in any foolish way, either of spending your time or your fortune, as you are now fearful of neglecting the public worship. Now, who that wants this general sincere intention can be reckoned a Christian? And yet, if it was among Christians, it would change the whole face of the world. True piety and exemplary holiness would be as common and visible as buying and selling or any trade in life. Let a clergyman be but thus pious, and he will converse as if he had been brought up by an apostle. He will no more think and talk of noble preferment than of noble eating or a glorious chariot. He will no more complain of the frowns of the world or a small cure or the want of a patron than he will complain of the want of a laced coat or a running horse. Let him but intend to please God in all his actions as the happiest and best thing in the world, and then he will know that there is nothing noble in a clergyman, but a burning zeal for the salvation of souls, nor anything poor in his profession but idleness and a worldly spirit. Again, let a tradesman but have this intention, and it will make him a saint in his shop. His everyday business will be a course of wise and reasonable actions made holy to God by being done in obedience to his will and pleasure. He will buy and sell and labor and travel because by so doing he can do some good to himself and others. But then, as nothing can please God but what is wise and reasonable and holy, so he will neither buy nor sell nor labor in any other manner, nor to any other end, but such as may be shown to be wise and reasonable and holy. He will therefore consider not what arts or methods or application will soonest make him richer and greater than his brethren, or remove him from a shop to a life of state and pleasure, but he will consider what arts, what methods, what application can make worldly business more acceptable to God, and make a life of trade a life of holiness, devotion, and piety. This will be the temper and spirit of every tradesman. He cannot stop short of these degrees of piety. Whenever it is his intention to please God in all his actions, as the best and happiest thing in the world. And on the other hand, whoever is not of this spirit and temper in his trade and profession, and does not carry it on only so far as is best subservient to a wise and holy and heavenly life, it is certain that he has not this intention, and yet without it, who can be shown to be a follower of Jesus Christ? Again, let the gentleman of birth and fortune but have this intention, and you will see how it will carry him from every appearance of evil to every instance of piety and goodness. He cannot live by chance or as humor and fancy carry him, because he knows that nothing can please God but a wise and regular course of life. He cannot live in idleness and indulgence, in sports and gaming, in pleasures and in intemperance, in vain expenses and high living, because these things cannot be turned into means of piety and holiness, or made so many parts of a wise and religious life. As he thus removes from all appearance of evil, so he hastens and aspires after every instance of goodness. He does not ask what is allowable and pardonable, but what is commendable and praiseworthy. He does not ask whether God will forgive the folly of our lives, the madness of our pleasures, the vanity of our expenses, the richness of our equipage, and the careless consumption of our time. But he asks whether God is pleased with these things, or whether these are the appointed ways of gaining his favor. He does not inquire whether it be pardonable to hoard up money, to adorn ourselves with diamonds, and gild our chariots, whilst the widow and the orphan, the sick and the prisoner want to be relieved. But he asks whether God has required these things at our hands, whether we shall be called to account at the last day for the neglect of them, because it is not his intent to live in such ways as, for aught we know, God may perhaps pardon, but to be diligent in such ways as we know that God will infallibly reward. He will not, therefore, look at the lives of Christians to learn how he ought to spend his estate, but he will look into the Scriptures and make every doctrine, parable, precept, or instruction that relates to rich men a law to himself in the use of his estate. He will have nothing to do with costly apparel, because the rich man in the gospel was clothed with purple and fine linen. He denies himself the pleasures and indulgences which his estate could procure, because our blessed Savior saith, "Woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation." Luke 6:24. He will have but one rule for charity, and that will be to spend all that he can that way, because the Judge of quick and dead hath said that all that is so given is given to him. He will have no hospitable table for the rich and wealthy to come and feast with him in good eating and drinking, because our blessed Lord saith, "When thou makest a dinner, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, nor thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made thee. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just." Luke 14:12-14. He will waste no money in gilded roofs or costly furniture. He will not be carried from pleasure to pleasure in expensive state and equipage, because an inspired apostle hath said that all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. 1 John 2:16. Let not anyone look upon this as an imaginary description of charity that looks fine in the notion but cannot be put to practice. For it is so far from being an imaginary and practical form of life that it has been practiced by great numbers of Christians in former ages who were glad to turn their whole estates into a constant course of charity. And it is so far from being impossible now that if we can find any Christians that sincerely intend to please God in all their actions, as the best and happiest thing in the world, whether they be young or old, single or married, men or women, if they have but this intention, it will be impossible for them to do otherwise. This one principle will infallibly carry them to this height of charity, and they will find themselves unable to stop short of it. For how is it possible for a man that intends to please God in the use of his money, and intends it because he judges it to be his greatest happiness, how is it possible for such a one in such a state of mind to bury his money in needless, impertinent finery, in covering himself or his horses with gold, whilst there are any works of piety and charity to be done with it, or any ways of spending it well? This is as strictly impossible as for a man that intends to please God in his words to go into company on purpose to swear and lie. For as all waste and unreasonable expense is done designedly and with deliberation, so no